Well, it's really a pleasure to meet Dan Dickerson, a voice that I'm sure those in the WJR listening area will recognize from his longtime work in the Detroit area as a play-by-play announcer for the Tigers. But he also, we're really pleased, he's an adjunct professor, instructor in the MSU Journalism School, working with us on broadcast and sports journalism and lots of things. So let me sort of start with baseball, because I have to admit that I really wanted to be a catcher for the Yankees growing up, and I just didn't quite make it. I didn't grow
tall. I like the ambition, though.
The ambition was there. I was going to be an Indianapolis race car driver, but I was a little bit too young for Danica, older for Danica Patrick, and my driving skills really weren't that good either. But tell me about how you see baseball changing as you've looked at the announcing, the process, the people you've had a chance to meet and talk to.
Yeah, I had the great pleasure of interviewing the commissioner about that very topic, because it is changing, and he wants to, and he's a fascinating guy. He's a very smart guy, obviously, but he's kind of thinking out of the box, and he believes baseball does have to change to meet with attention spans that are growing shorter, and the games are getting longer. I mean, we had nine-inning games that lasted 4 hours or more this year. That just doesn't happen. So he's got a lot of ideas. I mean, we may see a pitch clock in baseball. Now, I don't like the idea, but when you talk to the commissioner and you realize these are things that have to be done to move the game along, it's the pace of the game, and then now you're getting into the time of the game. But just keep it moving along. Keep the pace going. It's a game of home runs and strikeouts right now. It is changing. But it's also a time when you've got probably, at least in the last 20 years, the best group of 25, 26-year-olds and younger stars in the game who are really driving the game. And it's so fun to watch. I mean, the list is endless. And it's making for, I think, a very exciting game. But there are going to be some changes. A pitch clock, to me, seems very almost radical, and yet it makes sense when you think about it. Fewer mound visits, little tweaks to keep the game moving. From my perspective, I love what I do. The analytics are very – I've always been a numbers guy. I was drawn to baseball because of numbers. I was figuring out ERAs when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I love to do that. So to me, the important thing is, okay, of all these numbers, what helps, you know, bring some clarity or bring some understanding or help people understand the game a little bit better if I work it into a broadcast? I'm not going to just start dropping in, you know, FIP and WAR and things without explaining what they are or how they're used by teams. Because we're all trying to figure out how good a player is or how good a team is. Well, you get down to this is how teams are doing it. So as fans, we like to figure it out. And so those are the kinds of things. And then the beauty of my job is I get to talk to the best players, the people who know the game the best, managers, coaches, and hopefully learn a little bit about the game every day and bring that to the air. So there are a lot of things going on. There's never should be a shortage, however good the team is or isn't this past September, of things to talk about.
If you step back and look at it, I think from a little broader perspective of just sport and step away from baseball but include baseball, we've done a number of things from TV contracts, making games longer. There's a business side
right
to it getting. And then you also look at individual preference, how individuals like to approach sports. So it used to be, I remember the 84 Tigers extremely well. Can probably rattle off pretty much the entire starting lineup.
Yeah.
But in today's society, we're very much more individually focused. And when you look at the NFL, it's more about your fantasy team than your local team, right? And those two things really are colliding in a sports compression that I think, you know, there's nothing better than a father sitting with his son watching a baseball game and talking about the game and life, the game and life. And baseball gives you that opportunity.
Yeah.
And you just feel like if you're adapting to certain things, maybe that's not in our best interest. Maybe it's in our best interest to let the game be the game and see what happens. But there's a business side to
it. There's a business side. And I, like I said, the pitch clock just as a concept bothers me, because it's the only game left without a clock pretty much. And yet I do understand what he's talking about. And I think, you know, you have
– And that'll be another thing we comment on, right?
Right.
Well, he's down to 12 seconds. And
right,
he's like, yeah.
Hopefully not. Hopefully not. Because I did talk to some minor league pitchers. They've got a double-A and triple-A now. And they said, actually, once you are aware of it, it almost never comes into play. And so hopefully you're not counting down the pitch clock. I can't even imagine what that would sound like. I don't even want to think about it. But I think it'll
there's only
end
3 seconds on the clock.
Right. I don't picture it. And then there's ball one because he didn't deliver the pitch in time.
Unfortunately, the batter stepped out of the batter's box and there's another 30 seconds.
Yeah, it could be endless.
Right. it's interesting. Comerica Park is such an extraordinary place to go. I mean, Little Caesars is getting a lot of attention now, and it is extraordinary. But Comerica is a great place to watch a baseball game.
It really is. I love hearing. I mean, I'm biased, and I grew up at Tiger Stadium in the center field bleachers when they were first $1.50 when I started driving down. Mm-hmm. Bless my parents for letting me drive down when I got my driver's license. I am going down to go ahead. Love sitting in the center field bleachers. I love that ballpark, but this ballpark, I think they were smart. It's very different from Tiger Stadium. Takes the view of downtown. Mm-hmm. I love hearing people come into town and say they love the ballpark because I do love it. I think it's great. And other people come in from out of town, other announcers and people just like are sitting in the press box or in the radio booths, TV booths, and they love it. So I think they did a lot of things right. I think that ability to walk all the way around the ballpark and never lose sight of the field is genius. Mm-hmm. There are maybe only one or two other ballparks that have that. It's a great place to watch a game. It really is.
And there are some great experiences out in the outfield, too, that you can may not have to have the same obstructed sight line
right.
for one of those corners if you're way over on the foul line. But you can walk with your family or you can sit down in the seat and have your family go and play a bit, and it gives everybody a chance to become a Tiger fan, Tiger faithful.
Our kids were, when I took the job, they were 5 and 2, and, my wife, Lori Ann, who teaches here, would take them to the carousel, but at least she had those options, and then get them back to the seats for maybe an inning or
right.
two.
Yeah.
But that is a good option to have for, if you want to get kids to the game and have them love baseball, you've got a few things to do.
And grow Tiger fans.
That's right.
So Jack Morris and Alan Trammell just announced the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
You have Kirk Gibson that just went into the College Football Hall of Fame.
Pretty neat. Great
Tigers, and it's just kind of part of that ongoing story of Tiger lore.
It really is. It really is. It was so neat to see the press conference. I only caught a bit of it, but, Jack is getting all choked up. You don't picture that.
Right.
But he clearly affected him, and Tram, I think, is still kind of, if not in shock, I think he's been thinking about it for so long and hearing about it, being asked about it for so long that I think it's still sinking in with him. But it's just so great to see both of them get it. I don't understand how Lou Whitaker wasn't on that ballot, much less not getting the votes, but he wasn't on the ballot this time for the Veterans Committee. He's every bit as deserving, and I really mm-hmm. do think he'll get in because I think people are realizing this guy's been overlooked. Greatness over a 20-year period, maybe you're just very good, but that's Hall of Fame. If you compete at that level for 20 years, even if you weren't considered the best for most of those years, but you were at the very top, that's Hall of Fame. Longevity does matter, and those two together for 19 years is something that we'll never see again.
And I think that's part of the connection that maybe people during that time really had with the Tigers, right, is that longevity. And
absolutely.
Yeah, they were part of your family.
They really were. And Gibby, it's so fun to have Gibby around in spring training. I mean, he's out there and working on base running, and I just love how they brought some of those Tigers back. I mean, Tram's part of the organization, but Gibby's a spring training coach.
Mm-hmm.
Jack has come and done some games, broadcast some games. I did a game with him last year on television. So it really is. I mean, I love having those older Tigers who are around a lot. And, if you've been around Gibby enough to know, he's teaching base running, and he's teaching it with an attitude.
Right,
right. Everything is with an attitude.
And his passion just
yeah.
comes out, and it's just, you love it.
Well, really, that attitude is what's permitted him to be so aggressive about fighting a disease that gets other people down emotionally, but also to demand the same kind of teamwork and dedication to detail that he demands in baseball if he's out just on a day when you're just sort of lazily throwing the ball around. He's going to want you to do it perfectly.
Right.
And with the Parkinson's disease. So it's really a pleasure to have him back here and so vocal.
Yeah, it is. And it's when you see him at the ballpark, that brain, people don't realize just how much he thinks the game and how much he knows. And he'll walk by, Danny, what do you got today? What do you got? And then I'll say something, and he's got 4, 5, 6 ideas about what he wants to talk about for that game. I love talking to him.
So I'll go. I declared early on that I had this initial young kid bias for the Yankees, but I'm a Tiger fan now, so don't fear. So in this little hot stove, since you're used to this kind of conversation, what do you think about this Judge Stanton deal? If you're a Yankee fan, you got to feel pretty good about it, huh?
Oh my gosh, it's stunning. It really is. I mean, that's. Embarrassment of riches doesn't even begin to cover it, does it? Right. When you've got Sanchez and Judge, and you've added Giancarlo Stanton to the mix, it's really something. I just didn't think they had the prospects left to pull it off, but I guess they had the monetary resources to pull it off, and that was the number one thing for Derek Jeter and the Marlins.
Well, actually, unlike basketball, you have plenty of balls to play with, and every tournament bat isn't competitive, so you can have all those guys sort of stacked up.
Oh, it's astounding what they're building there. To add that to a team that was that good and almost got to the World Series, that's phenomenal that they pulled that off. And credit to the Yankees. They had to probably get pretty creative, and they probably had to have long discussions and figure out how they were going to put together a package that would land them, and they did. I didn't think they could do it.
But the Tigers are building slowly, but a little bit slower than that, but maybe a little bit less flashy. That might be the difference between Michigan State can play the part of the less flashy player in the way we build, but still there for championship competition. So, what do you think about next year?
It's fascinating, I don't think it seems like everybody could possibly be traded, but I do think they're looking at it as Ron Gardenhire has to have some pieces to work with next year. So I don't picture them trading any of their young players. By that, I mean, you hear Nick Castellanos' name come up. I don't think so. I mean, he's 25, and he's, I think, just getting to where he wants to be as a hitter, and I think there's still a big upside there for Nick. You need Miggy to be healthy. But, all right, so you take the best-case scenario. I mean, I always like looking at that. Okay, what's the best-case scenario? You get Miguel healthy, and there have been some really good pieces written about other players with disc issues in their backs who have taken care of that issue through the proper workout regimen to actually go on, even in their 30s, to have long careers and productive careers. I mean, this guy's on a Hall of Fame track. He can still be productive. I don't think people believe that, but I think there's a track record of other guys that he does have that capability to still have a very productive career. If you've got that bat in the middle of the lineup, Castellanos, Candelario, the third baseman, is intriguing to me. The outfield will be... There's some question marks there. There probably will be some struggles offensively this year. I remain intrigued by Jacoby Jones just because I don't think we've seen a center fielder like that since Austin Jackson. That ability to go get it at Comerica Park is fun.
It's a big space.
It's a big deal. It's fun to watch a guy who covers ground. Jacoby Jones could be special. Right now he can't hit. Lloyd McClendon believes in him, but I just think he's a guy to keep an eye on. These guys are so high in his defense. He's a game-changing defensive center fielder. Can he hit enough? So offensively, there might be some struggles. But if Miguel's back to being close to Miguel, they could be okay. So then I immediately go to rotations. How good could this rotation be? And that's where Chris Bosio, the new pitching coach, comes in. He's got a great track record of turning guys with talent. I'm not talking about a miracle worker who takes a guy who has no talent and turns him into something. Guys who have talent who've underperformed and turn them into something, whether it's Kyle Hendricks or Jake Arrieta, Jason Hamill. And I look at him, and you look at Daniel Norris and Matthew Boyd. These are two guys who I think any team would be glad to have because they've got that potential and the stuff, and I think he could really turn them into something, turn them into really productive. Daniel Norris could be a number two starting pitcher in a lot of rotations if he realizes his potential. Bosio's got that track record of doing it. Those are the two key guys because I think we know we have Michael Fulmer. I'm assuming the Tigers are not going to trade him away, even though we hear rumors about it. Jordan Zimmermann, big question mark. But there's a potential for a decent rotation. If you have a decent rotation or above average, even if everything worked out, then you've got the makings of something. They weren't good this year outside of Michael Fulmer and Justin Verlander before he got traded away. The bullpen was a mess. But if you start with a decent rotation, I think it could be better than that, then you've got a chance. So I keep hearing, they're going to lose easy at 100. I don't think so. I just don't. And I think Ron Gardenhire is a difference-making manager. I really do.
So I'm going to let you talk about academics because I've done sports.
Yeah.
I'm going to see my baseball junkie.
We're all 0-0 right now, right?
What's that?
I said all the baseball teams are 0-0
right
now.
That's right.
Before I jump into the classroom, because I know both you and Lori Ann spend so much time here with our students, I want to just finish up on Detroit. And President Simon talked about the value of Little Caesars Arena,
yeah.
Comerica. You've got Ford Field. And really what's growing up around that
right.
whole complex, the number of restaurants that are being added, hotels that are being added. Are you seeing that vibrancy really have a positive impact? You can go to dinner before the games,
right.
after the games, and it's a yeah. fun place to be in downtown Detroit.
Bars and restaurants can drive a revival of a downtown. I think that's kind of where it started, because there are a lot of independent brew pubs and restaurants that are driving the traffic downtown. And now with the Little Caesars Arena, I mean, mm-hmm. Chris Hillich's whole vision was, that's why they sunk it below the ground. He didn't want to tower over everything, make it more part of a collection of restaurants, bars,
sure.
shops, mm-hmm. and I think that's important. And
yeah.
I think
the energy down there,
the
is
energy
just,
is impressive.
High, yeah.
I remember Lorianne and I were downtown, and we were driving. This was two winters ago. We were downtown for an event, and we looked up at the Whale Building that's been empty for how
right.
many years? That's out in right field at Comerica
right.
Park, and it was full. And I just remember being stunned. Like, well, that kind of was quietly. But it's apartments now, and
right.
it's full.
Yeah.
This was 2 years ago, and now all these buildings are, I mean, those old Lumber Baron houses that are north of the ballpark.
Right.
Either been torn down if they weren't worth fixing up, or they've been fixed up, and
mm-hmm.
and that's phenomenal. But then you're going to have these other apartment buildings. I mean, it's filling up.
Right.
And that's how you drive, and then it has to spread to the neighborhoods. But I think you start.
And you're seeing restaurants and bars pop up where you would never imagine
never
them popping up. And
there's
then
a lot of creativity right. there, which
yeah.
is really neat.
All right, let's jump to the classroom.
Sure.
I know you spend time with a lot of our students, our journalism students, as does your wife. Tell me why you do.
You know, it's just Lorianne started teaching here 20 years ago now,
mm-hmm.
I think. And right from the start, I mean, she'd invite me up just to talk about the broadcast side of things. She's
sure.
taught print for forever. And I love being in the classroom to just kind of give a feel for, because broadcast writing is very different from print. You got to get to the point.
Mm-hmm.
It's short, it's sweet, it's let's get to the point. And I had some very good teachers, and there's a book out there that I still follow to this day that's really well written, and here's how we do it. So I just like being in the classroom. And then she really started with Sue Carter, the sports journalism portion
right.
of the equation. And that to me was, obviously, that's even more fun. So she's using teaching a 200 or 300 class and then the sports class. And so I usually come in at least once a semester just to talk to her class about it. And sometimes it's just helpful just to talk about your career path and how you got to work, because mine kind of zigged and zagged before I got to the Tigers booth. And so that's always, I think, helpful. But also just to talk about the covering sports, covering games.
Mm-hmm.
And then that led to, I mean, the new newsroom that opened up this past January is, as you know, it's a game changer to me. It really is. It's phenomenal. It's really boosting the broadcast side of the journalism equation. And those students are just jumping in feet first. You've seen the Spartan Sports Report. Those kids are doing that on their own every Tuesday.
Right.
Putting together. I mean, they're working so hard at it. But
From video gaming to virtual reality,
right.
this whole complex in comm arts
phenomenal.
Is just, it's evolved so fast.
And it's so energizing.
Yep.
So when Lori asked if I wanted to teach a class, it's sure. I taught one a long time ago, but I thought that was more broadcast writing. This was play-by-play 101 is what I
right.
call it.
Yeah.
Yep. And I said, sure. I mean, it's short course because it has to be, because I have to get to spring training. But I loved it. I just loved it. It's so fun because I know how I do what I do, but how do I teach what I do? And the kids were so good. It just, it was a lot of talking, but then they got a chance to put it into effect. Sports department's been, the media relations have been working with us to help
yeah.
get them into venues, because I don't know any, you can practice off of TV all you want. In my opinion, you have to be at the venue.
Yeah.
And
if you're like me, when you go in a classroom, you'll make a presentation and you'll talk to them, right?
Right.
And that's good, but it's when you get to that engagement conversation, questions
right.
and answers, where you're challenged.
Right.
You know, why do you do it this way? Well, why do you do it this way? And
right.
and you go into different conversations, and as an instructor, you really start to learn.
Exactly.
Not everybody has the same background or the same opinion that I do, and that's not necessarily bad. It's good to have those conversations, and I get
good.
As much out of that as anything, right?
Absolutely. And I've been thinking of the things I want to change a little bit more. I do want more give and take, because I may assume that this is just the way it's done and everybody understands that, but you're right. The why questions are always good.
Mm-hmm.
And I just try to say, this is how I do it. You do it however you want, but I think there are some basics that you have to start with preparation.
The foundation, right?
Yeah, that's the foundation, because all of these things feed from your preparation,
mm-hmm.
your comfort level, your confidence, how you're coming across, how people view or listen to what you're saying. And then there's so many areas to get into, but it's really fun.
So who had the impact on you that you hope you're having the impact on others?
I think I would start with Ernie Harwell, not just because he was a mentor when I was trying to – I'd never done baseball play-by-play other than practice tapes at Tiger Stadium when I called him in the 90s and said, would you listen to my tape? And we'd met. We didn't really know each other. Mm-hmm. But Ernie being Ernie said, sure, come over to my house and we'll listen to your tape together. So he was a big influence. I think listening to him, I liked how he called the game. I liked how he gave a good call for both teams, better call for the Tigers.
Mm-hmm.
But he drew you in. You wanted to listen.
Mm-hmm.
So just by listening to him, he had an influence. And then there have just been a lot of good people along the way. I mean, Chuck Swirsky was the guy who really gave me the chance at WJR when Frank Beckman was doing Tiger baseball, ironically enough, and they needed someone to do Michigan football for those September games. I mean, Chuck was the one who listened to my tape and said, here, Dan's ready to fill in these, the four or five games when Frank was doing Tiger baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And that probably the single biggest break, because that led to, Michigan basketball. But now you're, instead of a guy who used to do high school football in Grand Rapids, you're somebody who's doing a major sport in a major market.
Right.
Chuck was a huge influence. He supported me, and I know he's from the University of Michigan side of the equation, but truly, I mean, he did give me one of my biggest breaks. And then Ernie giving me an inning of play-by-play that last game at Tiger Stadium was rather remarkable, too.
So what advice do you give students? Because these are jobs that are few and far between in some way, about pursuing their dreams, but at the same time having the resiliency to follow different opportunities and different pathways that may not have been as clear to them as being the broadcaster for the Tigers.
Right. And I mean, if somebody said, if I'd only thought that I was going to be a Tiger announcer and thinking, well, somebody would have said, well, there's only 30 of those jobs. Why? You have no chance. And I probably would have gone a different route. I never believed that, though. So my advice, I guess, would be open to doing all kinds of sports, all different sports. Say yes when Big Ten U calls and says, I need a play-by-play for field hockey this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Can you do it? Say yes. And then prepare as much as you can. Talk to the coaches and just be willing to go out there and maybe feel uncomfortable and maybe struggle. But say yes. Because that's if you want to do play-by-play, I think the opportunities are going to be there, especially for women. And I've encouraged the women. I had four in my class last year, and several were very good. Don't limit yourself to the sidelines. I think many have been pigeonholed to the sidelines. Go for the play-by-play, because there's going to be more women's basketball, more women's volleyball being televised. But also, you want to call a football game? Beth Mullins is out there. She's been alone for 10 years, I want to say.
Yeah.
Go ahead. You can do this. I mean, we're going to knock down some walls, too. But I would never discourage anyone. Yeah, you're right. The jobs may be limited. And yet, if you're open to all the different sports and you look at how much television is covering sports on so many different levels, there really will be, I think, a lot of opportunities in the years ahead, but you have to be willing to do different sports.
Do you think in the future, as you talk to your students, these informal mechanisms, YouTube being the current one, but mm-hmm. there'll be something else after that, because theoretically I could go and I could sit at field hockey if I did my work with my mm-hmm. iPhone, and I could be a play-by-play announcer without ever having a TV station or a radio station to take my gig, and I could put it on. I could put it on a Periscope, and I could do it, right? So, do you see all these the entrepreneurship that goes with these new media?
Absolutely, and I tell students this is a good time to be working on your craft and trying to get discovered, because it's amazing. I think of Joe Davis, who all he did was replace Vin Scully with the Dodgers. He was a 26-year-old at the Montgomery Biscuits at Double A when somebody who was going online to look for a Montgomery Biscuits hat found it, heard Joe's highlights on the website, called somebody at ESPN, that's where he worked, and said, you've got to listen to this. I mean, you can be discovered in so many ways now. Mm-hmm. And like you say, work on something and post it. I tell kids, if you want to do a talk show, do a talk show. Do a podcast. I don't care if you have 3 subscribers. Maybe it's 6 next week, and maybe people say, you know what, these guys are pretty sharp. Let's give them. There's great opportunities to practice your craft because there's no way to get better. I was not a play-by-play person coming out of college. I thought I was. But it was, I mean, I actually played some of my college stuff for my class last year and said, okay, this is where it started. It was a little rough. It was more than a little rough. I'm not even sure I could hear the kernels of a future play-by-play person in there. But you have to work at it, and that they have opportunities to do that.
I want to come back to something you talked about or used about broadcast writing as part of your craft, that you have to be a good writer. Because people often see folks as being just a good talker mm-hmm. and not a good writer.
Mm-hmm. I think, so
tell
yeah.
me about how the writing skills and really polishing your writing skills make you the better.
You're employable for life if you're a good writer. I really believe that. I mean, just because whether it's an all-news radio station, that's where I really began to appreciate the good writing. I got exposed to Mervyn Block as the book I talked about earlier. It's a book that's out of print from the 80s, and I still use reprints of it just because, A, you can't find it, but what he talked about, and he was a writer for CBS News, just writing in that active voice, tightening things up. Don't lean on cliches. Mm-hmm. Don't talk about don't categorize the news. Devastating development today. Well, no, it might be, but you tell the news and let them decide whether it's a devastating development, the listener. So there are just some basic things. But if you're a good writer, which means you're getting to the point quickly, you're writing in the active voice always, never in the passive voice, you're getting your point across better, and then it gets back to your delivery and how you deliver it with your voice to catch people's attention. I always use the example that my boss in Grand Rapids gave me. People are driving down the freeway. There's a semi on your right. There's a retaining wall on your left, and it's raining, and you've got the radio on, but your mind might be other places. You've got to grab their attention,
mm-hmm.
and you do it with your writing, and you do it with your voice.
Can't thank you enough for joining us. This was outstanding.
Oh, this is fun.
We're proud to turn on every game and, right. and hear our Spartan up there. It's funny, when I go down to Tiger games, I always give him a quick text so he knows I'm there.
I look down, wave.
Give a wave.
That's great. So I'll text you the next time down there.
I do. Maybe we can get you behind home plate one of these games.
Oh, no. No.
Catch your first pitch.
I'm better catcher than I am a pitcher, that's for sure.
Appreciate all you and Lorianne do for this school.
Well, but also for the next generation of broadcasters and whatever the media will be for them.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
It's fun. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Take care.